And we start with a conversation about substance use disorder, an excess, something that affects so many people, but especially in the restaurant and hospitality industry. It's an industry we hold dear because it's where we celebrate our good times and it's where we indulge to release our stress, but it's also one that's filled with people who deal with anxiety and substance use. Dave McMillan is one of the owners of Joe Beef restaurant in Montreal, a legendary palace of food and drink. He realized, after years of running the place, that he was dealing with something serious in himself, and he's here to talk with us about his journey to sobriety. Dave, thanks so much for talking with us.
Thank you for having me.
So, for pretty much as long as I can remember, in the food world, the story has always been, hey, if you want to go party, if like you really want to go to party, go to Montreal and go to Joe Beef. Right? Like the reputation you guys have had for good times is legendary. So maybe let's start there. What do you feel guests saw or still see when they come to the restaurant?
Well, you know, first, it's kind of like a way that we practice the restaurant business in Montreal. There's a very cold climate cabin culture and a certain French-Canadian hospitality that is of Quebec. Right, that we are brought up in, that we understand to practice the restaurant business in, right? Joe Beef is a special occasion, festive restaurant that doesn't take itself too seriously, where we cook very good food, and we like to celebrate life. So that means aperitif, that means champagne, that means white wine out of magnums, that means red wine out of magnums, it means cheese before dessert, it means dishes for two or for four, duck for four, rabbit for two, and shared appetizers, just cover the table with food, foie gras, truffles, all of those things, calvados at the end of your meal before we send you home, all of those things, right?
And, I mean, that sounds amazing. I want to
be
there
practice,
right now.
We practice bistro French cooking and, you know, in a celebratory way.
Yeah. But you also say that you built the restaurant on your liver and that, you know, you at some point took in that scene, were a part of that scene, made that scene, but that it started to affect you in a way maybe different than some of the guests. Tell me about that.
Everything was fine for many, many years. Of course, I apprenticed under, you know, great, great chefs that lived the wine and food lifestyle. Mm-hmm. I lived the wine and food lifestyle. When I traveled, it was to go to other restaurants. When I wasn't in restaurants, I was visiting vineyards and wineries and distilleries. And it went really well till it didn't. I just felt like alcohol was a constant. My life, being David McMillan of Joe Beef, the social pressure of having chefs from all over the world visiting the restaurant and wanting to partake in this legendary, you know, Joe Beef experience, mm-hmm. became daily for me, right? Yeah. It became it when I went to the lake up north with my neighbors. It became that way when I received family over in my private home. It became that way every night at the restaurant. So then I would realize that I lived a grandiose eating and drinking lifestyle 7 days a week, you know, 28 days a month, 364 days a year. I drank wine and ate rich every day to mm-hmm. the point where I was no longer interested somewhat in the rich foods of the world. So there wasn't a wine that could... that I found interesting anymore, right? Mm. And I'd been drinking some of the finest wines in the world. I got to a place where I was no longer happy, where I had trouble breaking away from my daily life of being David McMillan of Joe Beef.
Yeah. So it's, you know, suddenly you weren't a person, you were a persona. And
correct,
suddenly,
right? I used to turn the show on. I lived somewhat of a very private life. I'm an introvert during the day, you mm-hmm. know. I focus on business. I spend a lot of time alone in an office. I spend quality time with my family, my children. But then around 4 o'clock, you know, one of my wine bars opens at 3 and it's quite busy. So, you know, 3 o'clock, all the wine kids show up at the wine bar and the tasting of wine would begin at 3. And then at 6 o'clock, more people show up at the restaurant next door, Joe Beef. And my other restaurant fills up at 6:30, Liverpool House next door. So then I'm hopping from one restaurant to the other. I've got glasses of wine on 20 tables. I'm telling stories. I'm entertaining. And there's always someone. There's always a chef from New York. There's always a winemaker from the Loire Valley. There's always another chef from Chicago coming tomorrow. There's always one of my peers coming, right? There's always someone to entertain. There's always someone that I have to put the show on. Even if I didn't feel like it, it just became like, this is how I earn my living. Yeah. I get paid by being this legendary tavern keeper who celebrates life with everyone, right? Yeah. And I was, you know, and I was getting to a point where I'd assumed that role, that I was going to be this unhealthy Orson Welles type chef who eats and drinks himself to death, and was going to be carried out on my shield like Bacchus, right. You know. But it just became unsustainable. I didn't enjoy the restaurant business anymore. I didn't enjoy the act of cooking. I didn't enjoy wines. I didn't enjoy, you know, I built a kind of a cool company with my associates. And I blamed the company, you know, for my misery. I just got into a dark place that I could no longer see joy in.
Yeah.
Right.
At some point you thought you really had a problem.
Yeah, I'd seen a friend of mine, Ryan Gray, who owns a restaurant called Elena, who'd worked with me for a decade. We drank together famously running the restaurants, right? He got sober a couple of years before I did. And, you know, at first I was like, ooh, he scared me, right? He knew something I didn't, right? He had information that I should get, but I wasn't ready to get yet.
Sure.
But, you know, one thing led to another. I felt that the people around me just started realizing that I was kind of caught in a trap, but that I was going out like on the shield, like for the people.
Yeah.
And a couple of the managers in the restaurants got together and they called a friend of mine who actually was, you know, a famous interventionist. And they just intervened me one day, one morning. They said, listen, we feel like you're not happy. We found you this help. It's local. We'd love you to go there. You seem unhappy. You seem in a rut. Will you take the help that we're offering you? And I said, yeah, you know what? Absolutely. Because I'd been to the point where I'd kind of Googled stop drinking a few times, or I'd tried to make changes in my life, but I could never string together more than 4 days sobriety. Like I'd literally have to isolate myself at the lake with no friends and white knuckle it. Like, you know, I was always very high functioning. Like I always got my work done. I worked a lot. I did restaurant work, you know, 12, 14 hours a day, but always under the haze of the depressant called alcohol, right? So a steady stream of depressant day in, day out, month after month, year after year. I ended up at 47 years old. Inside of a beautiful company, serving terrific food, surrounded by terrific people, the most miserable person sitting at the top of the pyramid of the restaurant. Right?
Yeah.
So I took the help that was offered to me. I learned an enormous amount of things in rehab. I went to Chatsworth Rehabilitation Center locally here in Montreal. I learned about alcoholism. I learned about the 12 steps, which I knew nothing about. I learned about codependency. I learned about traumatic events in my life that might have, you know, put me in an area that might be sensitive to, you know, abusing alcohol or abusing a medicator. So once I figured all of these things, it was just clear to me, you know, very clear to me that I could work, you know, that I had a problem and that I could get through it. And I took a little bit of time off. I sought counsel with my friend Ryan Gray, who worked in a restaurant and is a sommelier who buys wine sober. And I spent a little bit of time with him in his restaurant, a restaurant not one of mine, his, you know, just to get my legs back, right? I did the pass. I put on an apron. I dispatched food all night for about a month. I did my 12 hours of hard kitchen labor. I drank bottled water. I went home exhausted at 11 p.m. I found the bottom of Netflix. And I got my confidence back to be able to go back to my restaurants, right?
Yeah.
Once I was in, and I went back to my restaurants, and today I can say that you and people can come, and I encourage overeating and I encourage celebratory drinking. I just realized that I'm one of the people that historically does not drink alcohol responsibly, right? Yeah. So now that I know that, and now that I'm surrounded by, you know, people, and I, you know, I partake in meetings and I have a tight knit group of sober people around me, I can participate and enjoy this this gift I've been given, really. One of the most interesting things that happened, I'd say, after my participation in sobriety, I would say maybe 16 weeks into it, people around me and inside my peer group and inside the restaurants started seeking me out. I started getting direct messages from my peers. I started having people text me wanting to have a coffee with me. Mm. I started realizing that a lot of people in the industry were kind of living what I was living in a parallel way, sure. Right? So I noticed that if I was the Viking leader of Joe Beef Restaurant and I drank out of magnums every night and I ate and I drank with the people and I celebrated daily, that I was setting that precedent and that example inside of my business to the young cooks that look up to me, follow me, and work for me.
Yeah,
right?
For sure.
And as I walked away from that, and as I walked back to the fish market, as I walked back to the farms, as I walked back into the forest to go foraging for mushrooms again, starting to do sober man's activities, as I started loving the restaurant industry again and these beautiful businesses that I've built, there was a general come to the light across the company. I noticed staff drinking went down in all the restaurants across the board, like noticeably, you know.
Oh, interesting.
People started opting out of the glass of wine at the end of their shift or the beer for kombucha or nothing at all. That people were texting me, they wanted to go fishing with me now. They wanted to go mushroom picking with me. They wanted to know information that I had. They would go home early as I did. They would wake up early as I did and ask, can I go to the fish market with you? Can I go to the airport and pick up mushrooms with you? Can I come to the lake with you and can you show me which mushrooms are good to eat and which aren't? Can I go picking ramps with you? Can I go to the lamb farm with you this weekend? Can I go see the beef guy? Like, you know, all of this started happening. So as the leader at the top of the pyramid gets sober, it seems that there was a general feeling of wellness across the company. And if you look at it, and other people have reached out to me, you could apply it to many other businesses, right? The culture of a business, not just a restaurant business, but any other business might just be defined by he who is the appointed leader, right?
Yeah. I do want to ask, though, in what ways has it been hard to be back in the industry and back in the restaurant? Because I think about it, too, because you have a new book that's out. Came out a few months ago. And you guys are hilarious. The Joe Beef guys are known to be hilarious. So the fact that it's a cookbook called Surviving the Apocalypse, you know, and I thought it was just a joke, but so much of the book, now knowing this, is about getting away from the restaurant.
Absolutely. I look back at that book somehow, and it was, you know, it's a funny book. It's interesting. It was put together possibly in the height of my darkest alcoholism. Mm. And there's a plea in that book somewhere, just in the name of the title and the direction or how we even pitched the book was somehow like escapism. We were already, when we were pitching that book, exhausted, fed up. The book was about not being at the restaurant. It was right. about everything against the restaurant. It was about the end is coming. It was about let's go to the cottage. Let's be close with our families. It was like an anti-restaurant book that we pitched. Mm-hmm. We made damn sure that if we're going to work on this book, that it's going to be all stuff that doesn't chain us to a six-burner stove next to a deep fryer underneath neon lights, right? In a white tiled room. Kitchens can feel like insane asylums really quickly, right? I don't know if I'd write or if I'd pitch surviving the apocalypse right now. I would pitch something more joyous, you know?
More salads, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Avocado toast book.
But what has been hard about staying sober? Were there people who, you know, push back on you for changing, who want, quote, the old Dave back? I mean, how do you deal with that kind of thing?
You know, I have to say that people are amazing. I think that my friends who drink, you know, well, are fine with it. As long as I don't preach to them or try to recruit them into my program, they're all good with it. I can sit at the table with anybody and they can drink as much as they want. I just don't drink. Yeah. Eventually, it's strange for 2 minutes at the beginning because people don't know if they should be drinking around me or not. And I'm saying, like, please, you know, I just break the ice. I go, listen. Drink your face off. I'll make sure you get home okay. You know, the jokes are just as funny. If anything, I'm just sharper and I don't repeat myself. So I enjoy it. But I do feel when it comes to my peers, when it comes to line cooks like myself, right, I kind of sometimes wish that I could have drank a bottle of Jura wine with a line cook, right? Mm-hmm. That came all the way from San Francisco, that came all the way from Florida or Paris or London, right? But I get over it quickly because I look back at it and I said, I've had more years not sober than sober. And this year has been just a wonderful year. I've been very content and happy. I've attained all the goals that I wanted to in this year. And I feel that I'm in love with, you know, food and wine again, right? Yeah. Not that I drink wine, but I'm in love with the geography of wine, the history of wine, the organic viticulture of wine. We have a couple of wine businesses as well, which I'm excited about, the sales aspect of the wine, right? I'm excited about inventory management. I'm excited about the wellness, actually, the happiness of the kitchen crews that we oversee. When I was selfish in my addiction and my alcoholism, I paid less attention to the mental health of the 10 boys and girls working in any said kitchen, mm-hmm. right? Because I was selfish. I was more about me and my drinking. What am I doing? Whereas today, when that taken away from me, that selfishness is gone, I am more concerned about how is the kitchen doing? How are the boys and girls doing on the line tonight? Was it a difficult service? So the same amount of vigor and work that I put into drinking and celebrating, I put into other things now, right? I put into running that restaurant well,
yeah,
right? And I've had a lot of fun doing it. And to be in love with the restaurant business again, something that I thought was killing me,
yeah.
to actually, in fact, find out that it was a disease, alcoholism, that was killing me, has made it so much more fun to actually realize, to walk out of rehab and realize that I have this wonderful company of 6 restaurants that are just fun places to be at, full of dynamic, amazing people.
Yeah. What thoughts do you have, though, for someone who might still be struggling, though, with...
It's so dark. We've set up inside the restaurant now a meeting on Sunday nights at one of our restaurants that is kind of like an AA meeting. It's 4 people in the restaurant industry in our peer group that want to become sober or are sober, to talk really about restaurant experiences and triggers and the nightlife and how to navigate, you know, the marketing of alcohol, being the marketer of alcohol, right? All of those things. But I'm very, very aware that there are a lot of people that have issues, you know. And when I look back at how unhappy I was, I really, really want to help, you know, people. You know, it's a slippery slope. It's hard to help people unless they want to help themselves.
Sure.
So, you know, it's like I have a list of people that I have an eye on, you know. And that know that when they're done and then they want to come in from the cold, I'll have a warm jacket for them. I also understand one thing, which is like, you know, because of who I am, I had a rehabilitation of privilege, right?
Right.
I had many managers on my payroll help me to go to a very good, very expensive rehabilitation program, spending money on therapy on a weekly basis to see good therapists who understand addiction counseling is not inexpensive. Also, because I have no fixed job, I'm not holding a salad station or I'm in charge of a halibut tonight, I can take the time to do the work that I need to do to stay sober. So when I see young people struggling in the kitchen that are not paid very much money, that can't take a week off to seek therapy, that can't afford therapy and can't even afford rehab. And then once they actually go to rehab, they can't even afford to pay the month rent, their cell phone bill, their electricity bill, you know, just taking 30 days off from your life has costly implications.
Yeah.
Exactly. For a lot of people, it's impossible, especially young line cooks. You know, so that's something that's been bothering me a lot. I've spoken inside of my peer group with my restaurant friends. I said, it's funny because we raise so much money for so many different charities. But I said, when it came time to actually having to help employees, not only of my own restaurants, but my friends' restaurants, there's no funds available, zero, right? But, we probably participated in raising over $2 million for various charities last year. But I can't scrape together, you know, $3,000 to send, like, you know, 30 kids for 1 hour of therapy, right? So we're working on that. We're working on setting up a big dinner and a charity and having money available to be able to assist young people.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Dave.
Thank you kindly for having me.
Dave McMillan is a chef owner of Joe Beef in Montreal and the author, with Frederick Moran and Meredith Erickson, of Joe Beef, Surviving the Apocalypse. And if you are experiencing substance use disorder or another mental health condition and want help, you can find resources at splendidtable.org/mentalhealth.